We head down to the guest hotline to talk to the man, the Canadian info kid, Justin Dunk of Three Down Nation. How are you doing today, Justin?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. Can't complain. Out and about. The Stamps with another victory yesterday. The Calgary defense had 7 turnovers, and one of the concerns with this club was how the defense would react after they lost so many players. They lost their defensive coordinator in Devon Claybrooks. But what has impressed you about this defense as they have played in 5 games thus far?
Firstly, it's got to be Trey Roberson and the way that he's gotten his hands on the football time and time again, the interceptions that he's been able to rack up. I feel like there's so much talk out east, at least, about Delvin Rowe and his shutdown abilities. But what Trey Roberson is doing, not only shutting down the receiver he's covering, but getting his hands on the football when it comes over there, he's got to be right up there as, I feel like right now, the top defensive back in the league, jumping Delvin Rowe and Nick Marshall.
It's been impressive to watch for sure, and across the board there's been a lot of guys who continue to impress on that defense. But on the offense, Nick Arbuckle has taken the ropes at quarterback with Bo Levi Mitchell on the 6-game injured list. Dave Dickinson was critical of the offense after yesterday's game. But what are you seeing from them under the leadership of Nick Arbuckle in these last 3 weeks?
Well, what you have to like with Nick Arbuckle is at least he's remained efficient and he's not making the plays that are going to lose you games in terms of terrible reads and where he's placing the football. So at least he has an understanding of the game that way. I don't want to call him a game manager because I feel like that term is thrown around way too easily, but just not making those mistakes, and that's allowing the strength of the team, which we talked about off the top, the Calgary defense, to go out and be able to win them some games. Yes, they put up a bunch of points against Saskatchewan a few weeks ago, but Arbuckle, until he gets a little more comfortable as a starter, you got to be pretty confident with him in the way he's shown the last few starts.
Is there maybe some, perhaps, I don't want to call it worry, but trepidation maybe with this offense? They only put up 26 points against an Argonauts team that turned the ball over 7 times.
That's right. You definitely want to see more points put up off of those turnovers, and obviously touchdowns come with them, but I think we got to realize where we are with Nick Arbuckle, that he's just thrown into this situation somewhat unexpectedly, and probably one that, you know, he didn't think he would be in for a while with the streak that Bo Levi Mitchell had not missing a game until the last few, since all the way back in 2014, that, you know, this is just, you know, his first few starts, so we can't really start holding him to that high standard that if it was Bo Levi Mitchell who had gotten those turnovers, probably sticking those balls in the end zone and, you know, they win by 30 or 40. So I think, you know, got to take it in stride. It's a win. It's progress again, and he's not making those mistakes, which is going to allow him, I think, to grow and evolve.
Yesterday, they defeated an Argonauts team that now moves to 0-5, although they did give the Stamps their fair share of trouble yesterday. How do you evaluate this Argonauts team?
Well, they've at least gotten better from the first outing, and they got beat by 50 by the Ticats, and then the Riders put it on them on Canada Day, and it was pretty much over when that lightning delay happened, and they lose by 25. So they've shrunk the margins a little bit, but you just felt like that there's not really many difference makers on the defensive side of the ball or guys that you're sort of scared of or that you got a game plan for. Sean Lemon would certainly be one, but other than that, especially the secondary, you feel like you can probably throw at anyone. And then on offense, really what's been their struggle has been to protect the quarterback. The offensive line has been pretty terrible, no matter if it was James Franklin or McLeod Bethel Thompson back there trying to get rid of some passes. So I just think overall that roster hasn't produced to the way that we thought it would be, even with the addition of Darrell Walker as a main target, because they didn't invest in the offensive line.
We're talking to Justin Dunk of Three Down Nation here on Sportsnet 960. It's the Steinberg Show. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers will host the Ottawa Red Blacks tonight, Justin. This Winnipeg roster looks pretty good. Not many holes, especially as Adam Big Hill returns to the fold.
No, and they've been able to win the last couple games without Adam Big Hill and even Chris Matthews, who was a prize receiver signing, being out of the lineup. And it just shows the depth that the Bombers have built, obviously from an American standpoint, but even Canadian, too. They got a lot of playmakers there, and Most of them have been able to stay healthy from the national perspective, but they just continue to roll along, and Adam Big Hill no doubt makes that team better. But I think what they've identified here is that they've been able to sort of let Big Hill rest and not maybe rush him back into the lineup too soon. And, you know, there's still a chance he's a game-time decision tonight against Ottawa, but with the way that the Red Blacks come in and Jonathan Jennings is the new starter, I wouldn't be surprised to see them rest him again and just give him another game, because it's a long season. You want to have him at the back end of it.
How close, in your opinion, are the Eskimos to the Blue Bombers? Because the Blue Bombers are undefeated. It's hard to argue that anyone else is the best team in the league. The Stamps stumbled a little bit out of the gate. Edmonton's looked really good with Trevor Harris at quarterback. Where are you at on the Eskimos in relation to that Blue Bombers club?
The Eskimos got to be pretty close in second, I would think, in terms of ranking the teams throughout the league. Their only loss is to Winnipeg, and that game happened to be at IG Field too, so the Bombers have that home field advantage. And you get those teams on a neutral field, or maybe when they meet up again down the line and it's in Edmonton, maybe it's different. I really feel like the Eskimos coming into the season were under the radar. Not a lot of people were giving them credit. They were probably ranked in the bottom third of the league by a bunch of pundits, and they've come out now, and Trevor Harris has been hot. The offense looks great. But especially that defense and what Philip Lawley has been able to do in installing an aggressive approach, getting after the quarterback, really seems to have reinvigorated Almando Sewell up front, that big defensive lineman that just disrupts so much here, especially early in the season. I think they're right there competing with Winnipeg.
Talking to Justin Dunk of Three Down Nation here. The other two teams in the West have had their fair share of struggles. Craig Dickinson, the new head coach of the Riders, sees his club at 1-3. The Lions, under their new head coach, Devon Claybrooks, are 1-4. For these two, looks like a pretty big game tomorrow night in Saskatchewan.
It really does. And when you consider the back-to-back that they're going to have them play in BC the next week, that could really be an early season difference maker in terms of who is in the driver's seat for a potential playoff spot if you want to look way down the line. But I really believe that's what's at stake here. I do think the Riders are a little better than their 1-3 record, and the Lions maybe, but I just feel like there's so many moving parts in BC that were brought in. You mentioned Devon Claybrooks, a new head coach, Mike Riley, who didn't for the first time in a long time in his career have a familiar receiver there around him. It looks like Lamar Durant has taken that role in terms of who Riley trusts the most so far to start the season, but he was lacking that guy for years. He always had it in Edmonton, whether it was Darius Bowman, Brandon Dilstra, on down the list, Duke Williams last year, who's now in the NFL. That needed to be developed in BC, and quite frankly, the defense hasn't played up to par either. So I do feel like the Riders are a little bit better than their record, and the Lions still need to see some more from in terms of what they actually are.
Justin Dunk is our guest here on at Three Down Nation. So that's the deal with what's going on the field. But we have to get into this Montreal Alouette situation. Three Down Nation has some stories on the firing of Kavis Reid, where it appears that he was up to some stuff that you're really not allowed to do. Can you tell us what you'd know about the situation with Reid no longer with the Montreal Alouettes?
So essentially what was happening for a few months is the CFL was trying to build an airtight case where they could get rid of Kavis Reid and he would have no recourse from a legal standpoint to say that they got rid of him without just cause. They were essentially keeping a log, and it was something that the league wanted to do going way back all the way to even last November, maybe even potentially before that, when it became apparent that franchise was likely going to be sold. And then when the CFL started to run it behind the scenes, which happened early in the new year, even though it wasn't made official until about May, the league wanted Kavis Reid out. They really felt like what was going on behind the scenes was not all right. And publicly, we saw a glimpse of it when the league forced the Alouettes, more so Kavis Reid, to release Johnny Manziel. And Reid came out and said if it was up to him, that Manziel still would have been on the roster. So that was just a little glimpse into it from a public standpoint. But what was really going on behind the scenes is the league was talking to potential placeholder GMs to take the place of Kavis Reid for a year until the ownership deal was done. And then in 2020 or after the 2019 season, that new owner could hire a GM. So honestly, lots of stuff that still probably will leak out about what Kavis Reid was doing. And there have been people that have said to me that he was trying to circumvent the salary cap, which is going to be the most damning allegation and the reason ultimately he got fired.
How is this going to affect the players they're able to have on their roster right now? Like, we already saw them cut American returner Stephon Logan.
That's right, and there's been some other moves being made. Fabian Foote was brought back. Felix Colbert, Lucier, two Canadians that were released that the coaching staff did not agree with. Kahari Jones and his crew wanted them there, but Kamis Reed had made those moves for his own reason. So I feel like we might see a couple more moves like that, but for the most part, they've happened. The interesting part of all of this is that the league, when they were looking at potential placeholder GMs, or even now going forward with the collaboration with Joe Mack, and I really do feel like Kahari Jones has the final say, has a transactional and a budgetary limit on the Alouettes going forward. So it's not like they can be just buying players in and out of the city all the time. So those transactions are going to have to be carefully made because, you know, as it stands right now, it's the other teams in the league that are funding the Alouettes. So that's one note to keep an eye on going forward.
What about the on-field stuff with the Alouettes? Because through the most recent two games, they haven't looked too bad. I'd actually argue that the last two have probably been the best games that they've played in a number of years.
It almost seemed as if the drama ramped up off the field, the team played better on it somehow. Full credit to Kahari Jones for doing that. And that was a guy that became clear that needed to be in that leadership position. And then the next guy you have to look at is Vernon Adams, who was originally acquired and made his debut in the CFL by the Alouettes when they gave up a first-round pick to BC a few years ago to bring him to Montreal, has bounced around a little bit to Saskatchewan, Hamilton, now back in Montreal, but has seemingly got a handle of the CFL game now and is making plays. Dare I say, it looks like he's back at the University of Oregon with the Ducks when he was putting up video game-type numbers, threw for a career-high 327 yards last week in the win against Ottawa. I feel like he's really getting a feel for some of the playmakers around him. The offensive line has been solid. They're riding William Standback, and the defense, you know, has some veterans that they're leaning on. There's also some younger pieces that have been playing well, too.
We're talking to Justin Dunk, 3 Down Nation, and final one here, Justin. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Simone Lawrence suspension being upheld. He'll serve it for 2 games, and also the overall length of the entire process, as the suspension was due to a hit that he handed out in the first game of the CFL season.
That's right, man. It just took way too long. Over a month after that game happened, finally we have a decision. We know that Simone's going to sit out against Winnipeg when Hamilton comes back off the bye in Saskatchewan. I really feel like it's a precedent-setting move for the CFL, considering that last year Kyrie Zabert was suspended for 2 games for a hit in September on B.J. Cunningham, a guy that had a long prior track record. Simone Lawrence didn't have that. He had never been suspended in his career, and all of a sudden he gets hit with a 2-game ban. That sticks. So the fact that it was upheld speaks volumes, I think, going forward now, that if Randy Ambrosi hands down a punishment, unless it's, you know, way too harsh, I really think it's going to stick, and it's going to make defenders think, or hopefully a millisecond or half a second or whenever that decision is made, about trying to at least avoid contact with the head on quarterback especially. So ideally it makes it safer for the players, but it also really puts these defensive players in some tricky situations, because if an offensive player is trying to juke you or moves their head or neck area all of a sudden, and you happen to be aiming for a different point on them anyways and make contact, you might get a suspension when really the intent wasn't there. And I don't necessarily think that the intent of Simone Lawrence was to injure his former teammate, Zach Calero, either.
Good stuff as always, Justin. What's on tap for this weekend? You catching any of the games? What's going on?
Well, that's right, man. I'll be locked into it. I'm actually pretty curious to see how this Winnipeg-Ottawa game turns out, because they had Toronto in last week who was winless. There was a lot being talked about it being a trap game, and then you get Ottawa in here with a new starter. Can the Bombers keep this perfect record going? And then, honestly, I'll be locked to the TV set on Saturday too, but I'm really curious to see how the Riders team comes off the bye, arrested defensive line, and can BC actually get up off the mat from this early season struggle that they've had. So I'll just be locked into the CFL, man, that's all.
Right on. Sounds like a good time, Justin. As always, thanks for joining us, man. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk soon, eh?
Sounds good, buddy. You too.